with the third pick in the 2019 NBA draft, the New York Knicks select RJ Barrett.
David Stern with the announcement.
First pick, select Patrick Ewing. Basketball is back in New York City, my friend.
The New York Knicks select.
Good evening. Good afternoon, good morning, good whatever time of day it is when you're listening to this. It's your boy, Prez, aka Presidente, aka at underscore Presidente with a Z on Twitter. You can find me there, you can find me writing on the Strickland, you can find me on YouTube talking for the Strickland now sometimes. Go look at my video on pick and roll defense. And I'm here for the 19th episode of Draft Strickland, and the second episode in which we will be going through players that might be first-round picks. Probably, I can't even say all the players we're going to talk about today will be first-round picks, but there's very good arguments for all four of them, and two of them are almost certainly going to be lottery picks. So to help me go through four more players from the 2022 NBA draft class, I have a very special guest. His name is Will Morris. He's been on this pod before. If you don't follow him on Twitter, at @W_A_Morris, I highly recommend you follow him. Will sometimes writes about the draft, sometimes creates spreadsheets about the draft, sometimes provides the people, the masses, the streets, with great clips about the draft. And he, to me, selfishly, has been a very invaluable resource as I try to sort up from down in the last couple of years. Even if, I will say, some of his spreadsheets may have contributed to my obsession with Grant Riller, but maybe that's a conversation for another time. Will, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Prez. Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, I'll take all the blame for if you were too high on Grant Riller, because that is someone I was irrationally in on. But, you know, I'll always love Grant Riller.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, he's biding his time, waiting in, I think, Philly or wherever their G League. Their G League team is in Delaware. So he's biding his time in Delaware, I guess. I guess that's where he's at.
Yeah, I think he's had some injury stuff too. So hopefully he comes back healthy and everything, but yeah, we're still waiting on him.
Grant Riller forever. I'll never fully admit my mistakes, but we're not here to talk about Grant Riller. We are here to talk about combo guards, though, and that is the subject of today's discussions. Guys who, depending who you ask, might be combos, might be point guards, all of them could get buckets, but they're all very different players. Two who listeners probably know well, two who listeners probably don't. And I'm talking about four guys: Jaden Ivey, Ty Washington, Blake Wesley, and Alondis Williams. We're going to get to them in that order. And the first one I want to talk about is the most popular one, Jaden Ivey. If you went on Knicks Twitter maybe 3 weeks ago, things weren't looking so great. Rose was out. Nobody on the Knicks was shooting well. They were just losing game after game, and some fans began to wonder, are we destined for the top seven here? Could we jump into the top three? And, you know, even in these fever dream hypotheticals of us jumping into the top three, which never happens because we're Knicks fans, I found online that Jaden Ivey was the one who came up most as player that folks would love to see on the Knicks, even more than the other consensus number one guys like Paolo Banchero and Chet and Jabari Smith. And my theory is because he's such a ball of energy, and he's so demonstrative and decisive that, like, the Knicks were in the doldrums, and there was hesitations and poor decisions, and they just wanted somebody who would kind of take charge and impose his will. And looking at the Jaden Ivey highlights, it's easy to see why he would appeal not just to Knicks fans, but to other fans, to any fans really. But for folks who aren't as familiar with him, Will, do you think you could give like the 1 minute sales pitch for him?
Yeah, so Ivy is, like you said, a combo guard playing for Purdue right now. Popped as a freshman, as a guy who basically was generating lots of rim pressure, although he struggled with efficiency, shot like less than 40% from the field as a freshman. Kind of a guy who, coming into the year, everyone knew was probably going to break out. I think the question was, how much was he going to break out? Is it going to be, you know, this guy's going to be a top 20 pick, he's going to be a top 10 pick? But it seems like he's pretty much cemented himself as a top five prospect in this year's class. So just raw numbers wise, putting up 16 a game, shooting 50% from the field, 43.8% from three, which is pretty big considering he was at 25.8% last year. Upped his assist numbers a little bit. I think, you know, like you said, the main appeal with him is just how exciting he is, how incredibly athletic he is. Vertically, in terms of burst, change of direction, all of that, he has it. You can especially see it in transition. I think that's where he's at his best, as a guy who's just kind of flying by everyone. It kind of reminds me of Kyra Lewis Jr. a bit, just with how fast he is. Like, it almost looks like everyone is moving in slow motion when he has the ball. But unlike Kyra Lewis, Ivy has incredible vertical athleticism as well. So right now he's averaging 1.6 dunks per 40 minutes, and that's more than any guard prospect that I have tracked from Bartkovic data in the last, you know, 11, 12 years or so.
Even Ja Morant?
Yeah, even Ja Morant, even Victor Oladipo, even Anthony Edwards. And, you know, like, just to put it in perspective, so like James Bouknight and Anthony Edwards both had 1.01 and 1.02 dunks per 40. Ja Morant was at like 0.93. Zach LaVine had 0.93. Ivy's at 1.6 right now. So
it's a lot of dunks.
Ridiculous. It's a lot of dunks. And of course, you know, we'll see what that number looks like at the end of the season after he's had a whole schedule against Big Ten opponents. But, you know, I think in terms of the quick pitch for him, it's just the production combined with how ridiculously athletic he is and how much pressure he's able to put on the rim.
I'm glad you mentioned the sheer number of dunks and the pressure he puts on the rim, because one of the things that I find fascinating about him and interesting when we're trying to project what he looks like in the NBA is, like, you know, the guys you met, some of the guys you mentioned who got a lot of dunks, like Bouknight, and not so much Oladipo, but Bouknight and Morant, like, they were the offense in different ways. Like, Bouknight did play a lot of off-ball, but he was the main scoring option. Obviously, Morant was the main scoring option and passing option and everything option at Murray State. Ivy, he gets his buckets, but Purdue's really good, and he's not, like, can you talk a little bit about the role on his team? Because when I was first learning about him, before I had actually watched him and I saw his highlights, I thought his role was one thing. And then when I actually tuned into a game, I found out I was kind of mistaken.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that's one of the things that makes Ivy such a fascinating prospect, is that he's basically been dubbed this you know, star guard prospect. And usually when that's the case, that player is someone who, like you said, is like commanding a lot of usage, getting a lot of ISO reps and pick and roll reps and things like that. But that's not really the case with Ivy. Purdue has a lot of talent, particularly from their, like, they run a lot of offense through their big men. Like Travion Williams is awesome as a guy who can run the offense from the post as a hub there. Zach Edey has been dominant in the paint as well. So both of those guys are, you know, running a lot of the show offensively. And it's interesting because to me, usually when a guy is hyped up as like a consensus top five pick from the guard spot, you expect them to be, you know, running a ridiculous amount of pick and rolls and things like that. But that's not really the case with Ivy. So just to put it more in perspective with numbers, like around 50% of his made field goals this year have been assisted. And, you know, he does a lot of his damage off the ball. He's a fantastic cutter. Movement shooting wise, he has been really good. I mean, I think that's something that I didn't expect at the end of the season, but like there's plays where he's like sprinting off screens and he can like set his feet quickly and fire away. So I think a lot of the value that Ivy has derived this season, and I think, you know, he'll be able to do this in an NBA offense as well, has actually come away from the ball.
So do you think, you know, you kind of alluded to it, but like when you think top five pick, you don't think off ball threat. Like the last top five pick who I immediately thought like, oh, this person could be an off ball threat. Just trying to think, I don't know. It might be like Brad Beal or something way back. I don't know. It's been a while. There hasn't been that many star two guards in general in the NBA, like on-ball or off-ball lately, I feel like. I mean, you had Edwards and Green, but not as many as it was back in the day. So I think that's part of why people sometimes struggle to imagine how to, like, how to place Ivy. But do you think he can be, bring that sort of trademark star potential of a top five pick as an off-ball guard who can do damage? Like, say, you know, say he doesn't become some pick and roll maestro and he's just not just, I say just with air quotes, like, you know, movement shooting, tons of dunks, great cutting, you know, occasional half court penetration, lots of transition. Like, is that a top five pick level outcome? I feel like it is.
Yeah. I mean, I think if that's all he is, then I'd be like, I guess the question would be if that's all you think he is, like what would separate him from someone like Book Knight? Because to me, like Ivy has a little bit more on ball potential. There's definitely a lot of flaws. But I think it's a mix, right? Like there are very few guys who are just like purely on ball players as guards. Like obviously he's going to get some creation reps in the half court. So I think for him to like return top five value in this class, he's probably going to have to like reach a certain outcome as an on-ball player as well. Like I think if he becomes an awesome off-ball player, but some of the on-ball skills don't necessarily come along, then there's a pretty good chance that he doesn't return that kind of value. Although, you know, this is like a very strange class. Like this is not
right
top notch class. So maybe this year it is, but I think generally, like if a team is expecting him to be like the savior of their franchise and he hits a low end on ball that outcome but hits a high off ball outcome, they still, like the team or the fan base that gets him might still be slightly disappointed.
Yeah, especially coming off a year with dudes like, you know, Giddy and Franz outside of the top five. The flip side of that thing with Ivy, which is there's two more Ivy things I want to touch on. This is the first. The flip side of that, which is, you know, oh, he's used in this role that's largely off ball, and some people I've read see that as like, okay, this is how Purdue's maximizing him because this is what he's best at, And his finishing, despite his athleticism, is good in the half court, but not great. And his handle is good, but not great. Other people I've read say, you know, this is more of a untapped potential situation where he's being the good soldier and playing this role, but there's more in the toolkit than has been shown at Purdue. But Purdue is so good. This is just, you know, we see it often with a lot of really good teams with NBA prospects. Usually with Kentucky is the main example, but it happens all the time with other schools too, where it's like, you know, they get guys to buy in for the sake of simplifying and to accommodate upperclassmen who are also talented when you're talking about winning at the college level. So which do you fall in one camp or the other with Ivy?
I think I'm probably more on the side of I don't necessarily think Purdue is like doing him a disservice by playing him in this role. I think I'm more on the side of, you know, he has some on-ball potential. There are moments, like a play I always think back to is from the Indiana State game. And I know it's against Indiana State, like lower level competition, but there's a play where he's like driving left and then he like cuts back super hard between the legs. And it's just like ridiculous change of direction. Like the handle looks tight and then he just goes right to the rim and scores. And like, there's plays like that where you're like, wow, this guy can be a fantastic on ball player. There's also times where, you know, he's getting downhill in the half court and he's just making accurate, drive and kick passes or like lay down passes. He's like had some good pick and roll passing moments as well. But there's also like a lot of stuff that needs to get worked out. I think like he kind of, for the most part, only plays at one pace in the half court. Like there's times where he kind of just drives in a straight line without really thinking and he'll just get cut off and it just kills the possession and they have to reset and things like that. And then there's some flaws as a pull-up shooter as well. I know he's hit a fair number of pull-up threes this year, but most of the time when you're watching it, it's like, you know, he'll kind of have to make sure his feet are set. It's not like a super quick release. Maybe you have more to say about that. I know you're probably better at like the mechanic stuff than I am, but
well, that was my next question. It was like, yeah. How much are we buying? Are we buying all the shares in his jumper? Are we buying some of them? I mean, he's clearly, I think everybody will agree he's improved from last year, but it's more a question of how much, not whether he's improved, right?
Yeah, I think, like I said earlier, like his progression as a movement shooter off the ball has been remarkable, I think. You know, he's a guy who's so fast and so good moving off the ball that I'm pretty confident he's going to derive some value, like running off screens and getting his shot off quickly. But pulling up, I'm pretty skeptical right now. I know I was talking about pull-up threes earlier, but he's a guy that doesn't really take any pull-up twos. I think he's made 5 so far this season in terms of all long twos on Bartorvik in general, he's shot 6 of 30. That's 20%. So it's not very good. I think a lot of that has to do with just him kind of playing at one pace. Like there isn't a lot of, like he'll just kind of drive in a straight line and there isn't a lot of times where he'll stop and pull up. But yeah, I don't know. I think I have a hard time. Like I'm not saying he can't get there. I think even someone like Bradley Beal didn't, and he's developed into an amazing mid-range scorer, he wasn't a volume mid-range shooter or a volume, like high volume, high efficiency mid-range scorer in college, at least. Like, I think he shot 31% on long twos. But, you know, I'm struggling to like be all the way in on him as a guy who's going to hit pull-ups. But I think the movement stuff, the off-ball stuff, I can see that a little bit more.
I think I agree with you. I think where I stand is more like I value the combo of like intensity and motor and defense and movement shooting and transition. And I think, like you said, in this draft in particular, I think he can return top value without necessarily being some dynamo. Because like you said, you know, even Evan Fournier and Quentin Grimes get some on-ball reps, right? So like, and those are guys who are mostly shooters, quote unquote. I don't even know why I said quote unquote. They're both really fucking good shooters. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, I remember watching him in FIBA over the summer. I did not pay any attention to him as a freshman. I didn't watch any Purdue. And I remember distinctly watching him at FIBA and I was like, oh, his jump shot looks pretty balanced. And I DM'd a couple people and I was like, this is the guy who's like the question mark is his jump shot, right? Like this is him, Jaden Ivey, the one whose form I like, who's making all the shots in the international competition. And they were like, yeah, that's him. And I remember being like, okay, he's going to shoot that thing this year coming up. Like, I didn't think he was going to shoot it like this. And he certainly wasn't doing like coming off curls for threes for Team USA or anything like that. But so, yeah, I think at worst he'll be a solid shooter with decent variety. And it's all going to come down to like the handle and being able to change gears, like you said, because that'll do. If he can improve his handle and just chill the fuck out a little bit, stop playing like he's on like 10 Red Bulls, like he'll be able to, you know, maybe hit some pull-ups. And, you know, if you're going to shoot pull-ups, like shoot the pull-up threes at this point. And, you know, I mean, you have to be able to, I don't know, we'll see. The other problem, I don't want to spend too much more time, but like, I don't know about his floater game yet.
Yeah.
So, this is a whole nother like nerd conversation, maybe for another pod, but like, can guys develop floaters is a kind of black box, black hole for me. And it's really hard to tell when, like with certain players, I'm like, did they not take floaters because they suck at it? Or did they not take floaters because that's the rule for their team? Like Morey Ball, no mid-range. Or like Deuce McBride, did you not take floaters because you just love regular mid-range jumpers so much? You know, so it's kind of hard to sort through all of that with the college sample. But yeah, there's definitely some questions for him. But I think because this is such a different draft where it's basically three dudes and then kind of a flat landscape, I think we could probably be a little forgiving and just enjoy all the dunks. For now, we can close the book on Ivy and move to someone who's probably, to me personally, the most interesting guy I have in like lottery discussions in my own board, just because he's a fascinating prospect and I love me some Kentucky guards. So I'm talking about Ty, the combo guard at Kentucky. I know you gave the Ivy sales pitch. I'll give a sales pitch for Knicks fans. He's a lot, in some ways, like Emmanuel Quickly. He's a combo guard who is a very good shooter. How good, we can discuss, but he's definitely a really good shooter. And he's not really a threat to penetrate to the rim a ton, you know, far from Jaden Ivey or Tyrese Maxey. He's a mid-range savant, a little bit less. He can shoot a good floater, but his regular mid-range pull-up is just, I don't know what, I haven't checked the latest numbers, but for recently, it was like above 50%, which is fucking crazy. It was like 15 for 22 at one point on like mini pull-ups on the season. He was in the news the other day for having a 17-17 game, which sounds made up, but is a thing that happened. And he seems to be a good caretaker of the ball. Even though he doesn't actually play point guard for Kentucky, that distinction belongs to Sevier Wheeler, the Lilliputian-sized point guard, as Clyde would say. And similar to Quickly, you know that Quickly team, Quickly and Maxey were not the point guards, even though they're both playing point guard now in the NBA. It was what's his face? Do you remember that guy's name?
Higgins.
Yeah, it was, yeah. Ashton Higgins, who was a little older than them. And, you know, he was great in college, so, like, I get it. But similarly to that, like, I don't know if Ty Ty's going to be a two guard or shoot or a point guard or if it even matters that much, but he's interesting. This class is weak in point guards, and as Knicks fans, we're obligated to search high and low for point guards since we haven't had a franchise point guard in a zillion years since Raymond Felton, basically, unless you want to count new and improved Derrick Rose. But yeah, what do you make of Ty Ty? Do you think he's a point guard or shooting guard? Do you think, does the distinction matter for you? How are we feeling?
I think to me, the distinction doesn't really matter that much. I mean, I guess there is a question of, you know, how much on-ball usage is he going to be capable of handling in the NBA? If you know me, I'm always someone who values rim pressure a lot. And there's definitely guys who, you know, have taken a lot of long unassisted twos and have very few unassisted rim makes, and guys of that nature, many of them have tended to struggle as lead initiators from the perimeter in the league. Obviously, IQ is someone who has been an exception to that rule, and that was far too low on Quickly. So it's not like a hard set in stone thing, but I'm always still a little bit hesitant of people who, you know, are very reliant on long twos. it just kind of indicates to me a bit of an inability to get to the rim. So, but like, again, like I missed on Quickly for that same reason. And I'm not saying like, oh, I'm going to be high on Ty Ty because I was too low on Quickly and they both played for Kentucky or whatever. But I think like when you watch Kentucky's offense, there's like a reason why his unassisted two numbers are so high and the unassisted rim numbers are so low. Just to give some numbers here, this is a team that's 343rd in the country in 3-point attempt rate. Like they're not a team that takes a lot of threes, and what they so like they're just not a very well spaced offense. Sevier Wheeler is not a good shooter. They have Shibwe, isn't a very good shooter. So the spacing on this team is just not very good. So there aren't really a lot of open driving lanes. A typical Kentucky action is basically just running their guards off those little pin down screens and kind of having them work off those. And like a lot of Ty Ty's offense has sort of just been derived on actions like that, where he's just running off with a screen, taking two dribbles and pulling up. And it's like, if he were to drive to the rim, Oscar Shibwe would be right there in the paint with his defender. So it's just like, he kind of has to take that shot. I was looking at some data and I posted this on Twitter, but around 70% of Ty Ty's unassisted field goals this year have come in the mid range. And I saw that number. I was like, holy smokes. Has there been anyone else who's even in that territory? And there really hasn't been anyone that level. But what's interesting is that all the next highest guys played at Kentucky. So like I said, Ty Ty Washington, like 72% of his unassisted field goals came from mid-range. Next up is Quickly with 62%, Devin Booker 57%, Tyler Hero 56%, and Tyler Ulis 55%. So all those guys played at Kentucky. So there is some sort of like real thing with how Kentucky runs their offense that's preventing or encouraging guards to get their self-created field goals in this manner. One thing I did want to ask you about was, what do you think about the pull-up three? Because we've only seen him make one this year. He made his first the other night where he got a switch, he drew the big out, hit a little step back. But like, do you think that there's a real possibility where he starts to hit off the dribble jumpers from range? We know he's amazing from mid range, but like, how real of a possibility do you think that is?
I think it's a real possibility. To me, pull up 3-point shooting is a function of comfortable going from dribbling to shooting. So if you can shoot really well, but you can't dribble and your ball transfer isn't smooth and confident, then it's not going to work. It's, you know, we've all seen like end of shot clock dudes who are mostly spot up shooters have to like dribble and toss some nonsense up, and it looks horrible compared to catch and shoot. And the fact that he's so good at pulling up in the mid range, gives me confidence, because that means he's comfortable going from his handle to his shot in a crowd, basically. And it's probably going to be less of a crowd on the 3-point line. You know, his handle's not, he's not Darius Garland or Kyrie Irving or something like that, but I think his handle is solid. And like you said, I really think it's a function of Kentucky's offense. I looked up how many pull-up threes, I looked up the pull-up shooting frequencies for a lot of the Kentucky guards. I should have wrote it down. Damn. Or maybe I did and I saved it somewhere, but I forgot. And some of them were actually surprisingly higher than I remember. Like, I remember SGA's, I think, was a little higher than I remember. But some of them were super low. Like, quickly took, like, not, like, hardly any pull-up threes, which is ludicrous now. And over 30% of his shots are pull-up threes in the NBA. And they're all, like, the most, like, level 99 difficulty pull-up threes you can take, pretty much, unless your name is, like, Steph or Dame. So I think I'm with you in thinking that Coach Cal doesn't really encourage lots of pull-up threes from his guards. And if you just take kind of a step back and envision a normal Kentucky team, I know it's not the case with this team, but it's usually lots of like 6'9", 6'10", like long arm dudes, like bigs and power forwards and stuff. And then a couple of guards who can spark the offense. And, you know, given that those are the kind of guys he recruits, you could kind of see why he wants the guards to give him some room and prioritize making the bigs comfortable or the bigger players comfortable. And sometimes he puts it on other players to do that, like Devin Booker most famously didn't do like anything off the dribble. He had Tyrese Maxey coming off all types of curls for shooting, like he was Rip Hamilton or something, which was, you know, this is not Tyrese Maxey's thing. He was a good soldier, but like not his thing. So I don't know. I love his jump shot mechanics, and I don't know how good of a pull-up shooter he is, but I'd put the money on it, man, on it being not nuclear or anything, but solid at the very least. So it'll be really interesting to see if he has a chance to do that. What do you think of his passing and facilitating? Because that's the other part of the equation to me. You have to be a pull-up shooter, you have to demand attention, right? Like, nobody's going to care if, like, J.J. Redick goes off the dribble because he's not a threat to drive or pass, really. I mean, he's retired now, obviously, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So, like, because all the pull-up shooting thing, like, it's important, but if he's not facilitating, then all of a sudden I'm like, okay, he's a shooting guard who doesn't drive. Even if he's a good shooter, he's still undersized on defense. So like, what are we really doing here?
Yeah, I think I'm not total, like, I think the 17 assist game was a little bit out of the ordinary. Like, I saw some people on Twitter saying like, oh, Ty's one of the best passers in this class now after like the 17 assist game. And I mean, you know, 17 assists in a game, that's not easy to do, but I'm not totally there yet. Like, I think he's a pretty sound decision maker. I think recently he hasn't been turning the ball over that much. I know, I think early in the season he had some higher turnover games, but, you know, that 17 assist game and recently, like, well, Xavier Wheeler's been out and he's been leading the offense a little bit more. Like, he's been pretty poised in pick and roll. He's been good making that little skip or not skip pass, pocket pass to Shibwe. So yeah, I mean, I think his passing has been solid from what I've seen. Like, nothing too flashy, but is just generally a sound decision maker.
That's kind of how I view him too. The 17 assist game, lots of guys were rewarding him, which is great. That nobody's gonna get 17 assists with lots of guys missing, so that definitely played a role. But like, yeah, he's never like pulling passes out of his ass that are like amazing and I have to rewind. But he's got the basics down to me. And, you know, especially when you start talking about bench point guards, that's really what you need if you're hanging your hat on something else like shooting like he is. So, you know, in terms of floors, I think he has a pretty good backup point guard floor because of that, because he can make the reads and the basic reads. And, you know, I consider him a very good shooter. But I don't know. It's very rare for players to come into the league with like okay passing and then kind of just elevate to some level beyond that in terms of their passing. I haven't really tried to think about it in depth and write down the names, but it can't be many guys. So I feel like what we have is kind of what we have, which isn't a bad thing. Like you said, I think he makes solid reads. So to me, the tie question all turns on, you know, what you were talking about before is really the pull-up shooting, because he's probably not going to become a big rim pressure threat ever. And you're talking about him doing what Quickley did, doing what Darius Garland did, and just becoming a fucking bomber who can shoot it on or off ball to become an impact starter. Again, I still think he has a solid floor, but that's kind of where I'm at in terms of the tie offensive projection, which in this class, like you were alluding to, for me, that's a lottery pick. I haven't really even been thinking about like big boards or order too much, but I'm comfortable guessing that he's going to end up higher-ish this year for me, just because there's not that many guards.
Yeah, I think I posted the board like a month ago and I had him in the 20s, but since then I've definitely come around a lot on the pull-up three ball. Like, I don't know, there isn't a lot in this class that has excited me. And just the more I think about it, like, do I take a chance on someone like Ben Mathurin developing into like a viable on-ball player, where I haven't really seen much evidence of that, you know, manifesting? Or do I take a chance on Ty, who I think has a pretty clear avenue to start hitting pull-up threes? I feel like the path to improvement for him is just clearer than it is for a lot of these other guys. So, yeah, I mean, to me, I'd probably rank him in the lottery at this point, which is probably, I mean, I haven't, like,
yeah,
on some of the boards I've seen on draft Twitter, like, he's pretty low. And, you know, in mainstream boards, it seems like he's more consistently in the lottery. So I don't know. It's interesting. I guess both of us are more in line with like the mainstream on him.
Yeah. He's been in the top 10 in some mainstream boards, which again, I don't know where, I don't even know what my top 10 looks like, but all I know is I'm a fan of Ty. All right. Now we're going to get to the fun part of the podcast, which is, where you give me the answers to the homework and I get to learn about two players whom I have not watched much yet. And I think I'm beginning from highlights and clips to understand the theory of them. But again, haven't really sat down and watched full games of them. Two big ass point guards. So we can start with the freshman from Notre Dame, Blake Wesley. Do you want to give folks the quick sales pitch on him?
Yeah, so Blake Wesley, freshman from Notre Dame, averaging around 15 a game this season. Been a very high usage player for them. Been there, you know, carrying a 31% usage rate this season. So right away that pops out, freshman in the ACC who's carrying the load offensively. I think the quick pitch for him, I can sum up in this little stat query I have. I posted this on Twitter last year as kind of Bones Highland propaganda. But I think, you know, a similar thing applies to Blake Wesley. But here's a list of freshmen and sophomores to take over 10 threes per 100 and have 40% of their unassisted field goals coming at the rim. Trey Young, Bones, Anthony Edwards, Jamal Murray, Kobe White, Donovan Mitchell, Aaron Harrison, Lonnie Walker, Devin Booker, and Jordan Poole. And if Blake Wesley decides to go into the draft this year, you can add Blake Wesley to that list. So that combination of youth, rim pressure, and volume shooting is really appealing, even though he definitely has some flaws. Like, he's not a knockdown shooter at the moment, and he isn't particularly efficient around the basket right now, although he's able to get there by himself a lot.
He's got pretty long arms, right?
He does. His wingspan, I've seen it listed around like 6'11", in that kind of range. So I think there's some theoretical upside as a guy, like, and he's big, as you mentioned, too. Like, there's some theoretical upside as a finisher with him, with his length and his size. But like right now, the finishing results just haven't been there. Like, he hasn't been great in contact. There isn't like too much craft. He's at 53.7% at the rim.
Not great. Not great.
24.6% free throw rate. So that's definitely a little bit worrisome. I think the other thing with him is like, we can maybe get into the jump shot, because I think that's probably something that's going to have to come around for him if he's going to, you know, return high value in this class. He's at 33.8% right now, but he shot really well on pull-up mid-range jumpers. His mechanics, and you're a better mechanical guy than me. It almost reminds me a little bit of Cam Thomas. Like, he'll start it in his left pocket and then kind of bring it up. And there's times where like his legs will swing out to the left a little bit. But I mean, the results have been there for mid range. He's shooting 50% on long twos, which is really good.
That's a crazy number. Yeah, that was when I was looking at before I looked at any video. The first things I saw in this order was like, oh, free throws in the 60s. And I was like, oh, well, that sucks. Then I saw 3-point percentage and I was like, 34, not great. Then I saw 2-point jumpers, 48%. And I was like, okay, so he's ass at free throw, ass from three, dark from short, from mid-range somehow. And then I saw his threes per 100, which for folks who are not familiar with 3-point, it's 3-point attempts per 100 possessions is basically a good way to measure how comfortable a player is getting up 3-point shots. Basically, if you're in the double digits, that means you're willing to let that thing fly. And he's right up there. He's at 12. Holy crap. Yeah, so he is... clearly not shy. Like you said, he's carrying the offensive load big time. And that's a really good indicator, because usually it sounds kind of stupid, but like, poor shooters aren't willing to let that thing fly a lot. And often coaches won't let them let it fly a lot. So I haven't taken a really close look at his mechanics, but I definitely can see the Cam Thomas thing yet. I'm really excited to dig more into him, because there's some good indicators there statistically. And like you said, if you're talking someone 6'5 with a 7-foot wingspan, even if they're a little shaky around the rim, like, I'll bet on a big dude, a taller dude like that, kind of figuring it out for the most part around the rim. And if he can shoot it, I know now we're in the realm of multiple ifs, but you wonder, like, I have no idea. Well, first of all, here's the other thing with Blake, and I know I'm kind of going all over the place here, but like, on Sam Vecenie's board, he was 15. I don't know where he was on the latest ESPN mocks, but I feel like more than a lot of guys, he is all over the place on boards. So I feel like how he does, how Notre Dame does, like, he has a lot of, he could go end up easily a lottery consensus. He could end up second round. I have no idea.
Yeah, I really don't know. And I mean, he's someone that I personally have struggled to figure out, like, where would I be comfortable selecting him, just because there's a lot of real concerns here with, you know, how good is the jump shot in reality? How good is the finishing going to be? You haven't really talked about the passing either, but like, you know, there's times where he's like able to, you know, generate some rim pressure and make the correct read, but like, there's times where he's running pick and roll and he'll miss just like a wide open roll man, you know? And it's just like stuff like that is really concerning to me, just missing those kinds of easy reads. But
that was real quick. I want to touch on that because that was a question I had for you since I haven't really watched him. His assist percentage is like 18 or something. And for listeners who don't make a habit of looking up assist percentages, that's like what you get for like a mediocre passing off-ball guard, I feel like. Like Evan Fournier, I don't know what he's at this year on the Knicks, but it's probably like 15, 16, 17, 18, which is low for Evan Fournier in his career. Like most point guards, especially if there's the man on a team, are probably going to be north of 25, maybe even north of 35 if they're a good passer. Maybe even north of 40 if they're a really, really good passer. Maybe north of 50 if they're Sharif Cooper and John Wall. So 18 is really low. So it is like, is he the, does he share facilitation duties or is he just kind of oblivious and not really thinking about passing much?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's definitely like from what I've seen of Notre Dame, he's the guy who does like he has the ball in his hands more than anyone really. I mean, there is a Prentice hub as well. But like, I don't know, just to me, he misses a lot of those just basic reads that you'd want a guy who you're going to put the ball in his hands to make. And like, it's kind of like a classic concern with combo guards, but it's like, all right, this is a guy who like, who clearly has some decision-making issues. So how much, like how much usage do you want to give him? Because of that. And it's like, well, he's going to derive most of his value offensively with the ball in his hands as a creator. But, you know, how is it like, does he have the passing chops to actually, you know, command usage? So I think that's, you know, it's a very real question for him.
For comparison for the listeners, we talked earlier about the Maxi Quickly Hagans guard trio that got minutes together often a couple of years back. Quickly had a assist percentage of 11%. So completely, utterly not the point guard, not facilitating anything. He was pretty much a shooting guard. Maxi was at 18%. He had a little bit more chance to create coming off curls and stuff like that, like I mentioned. But again, not the point guard. So usually the guys who are in the teens like that are really not the point guard. Just because you have in the teens doesn't mean you can't play point guard. Like Maxi's absolutely holding it down. Quickly, even though Tibbs doesn't want to start him at point guard, absolutely holds it down in the point guard sense, making the reads and all that stuff. So it is very interesting with Wesley, and I don't know if there's any roster stuff that mitigates it for him like there is those Kentucky dudes. So it'll be kind of interesting to see where that number is at by the end of the year, because I don't know. He's almost more like at that point he becomes more of a true combo guard where it's like, okay, he's big enough. He could slide in next to a real point guard because he's 6'5" with long arms and likes to shoot. Especially if the shot does, you know, become more than theoretical. So in that sense, I guess you could say he has multiple ways to being an NBA player. I just don't know which one is likely.
Yeah, I think to me, he's probably just more combo-ish. Like I struggle to see him developing the passing that much. And I mean, that first, the way I started it off with like that little query, of course, there's guys like Trae Young and
yeah, exactly,
you know, who've developed into awesome passers. But at the same time on that list is Jordan Poole, you know, just like a classic combo guard. So I think that's probably the more likely route for Wesley to develop into a quality NBA player.
Yeah, and that's, you know, at his size, fortunately, you're not talking about the usual case with combos, which is like, oh, they got to make a lot of their money on offense because they're going to be, you know, like Jordan Poole, they're going to be downsized on defense and all that stuff. So, you know, his size helps him out in that respect. So we'll see what happens with Mr. Wesley. The last guy I want to talk about is another 6'5 guard, although I think it's safe to say he's probably more of a point guard than a combo. Alondes Williams. I don't know. Do you know if it's Alondes? Alondes?
I think it's Alondes.
Alondes Williams, who is he's at Wake Forest. This is his third year. He was at Oklahoma for 2 years, and he transferred. He was on national TV yesterday versus Duke. I didn't watch the game.
Yes, I haven't watched that game yet either, but I'm excited to. It was a
big
day for AJG.
Yeah. It was a fun game for draft watchers, because every Duke game is a fun game for draft watchers, but especially that one. So Alondes averages in college, 21, 7, 5, 1, and then half a block. And he shoots 55% from the field, 63% on twos, 33% from three, 71% from the line. He doesn't take a ton of threes, 6.5 per 100 possessions, which is not nothing, but it's not a ton. He's not a bomber. True shooting percentage, 62%. Free throw rate, 40%, which is really good. So I know he's a little older, third year in college and all that, so that probably explains some of that. But, like, this guy's assist percentage is 32%, and his turnover percentage is, like, 15%. So that sounds like a player who knows what he's doing out there. So, like, what kind of guard prospect are we really talking about here?
Yeah, he's so interesting because, like, I didn't – on basically nobody's radar coming into the year. Mm-hmm. He averaged 6 a game at Oklahoma for 2 years. And he would play JUCO before going to Oklahoma. So he's, I think this is like kind of a fifth year of college for him. Technically, like he's listed as a senior at Oklahoma last year. But he's tripled his scoring load and gone from a sub 20 usage guy to a 30 plus usage guy. So, I mean, right off the bat, like,
that's crazy.
Just ridiculous. It's an incredible story. He's putting together one of the most impressive rim pressure seasons that I've ever seen. And you know me with my unassisted rim makes thing. He's averaging 4.3 unassisted rim makes per 40, which is,
that's a lot. Yeah, that's like John Morant territory, isn't it?
It's tied with Elfrid Payton for as much as anyone.
Try not to speak that name around these parts, so if you could give another point of reference, we would really appreciate it, Will.
Okay, you know, my bad. But, you know, we'll say that he's in Devon Dotson, De'Aaron Fox.
There we go. John, now I feel much better.
My bad on that. He's shooting 66.2% at the rim, free throw rate tank, 40% free throw rate, has 14 dunks.
Yeah, I was going to say, because, like, I don't know what his dunks per game is, but he'd be throwing that thing down.
Yeah, he's I actually haven't calculated it, but I will get back to you on that in a second here. But
I can't speak on the quantity of his dunks, but the quality from the clips I've seen, like, he with the long arm, at any time a long armed guard can dunk and, like, cock that thing back, it always looks super cool. But, like, yeah, I've mostly seen it on fast breaks, so I don't really know if he dunks in the half court, but he's a pretty good athlete, I'm taking.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely has some half court dunks. It's mostly like him attacking a closeout or something where he has a clear runway. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's definitely a guy who's very bursty, capable of changing directions while driving. I think his best trait as a slasher is his strength and physicality. Like, he's a guy who, you know, and we can get into this later, maybe it's because he's older than everyone else he's facing right now, but
he's 22 for folks listening, so
yeah. But
and he'll be 23 by the time he plays his first NBA game.
Right. So that's kind of a big question here. Like, how much does that play a role into the way he's been bullying players?
This is the crazy thing for me. I'll stop interrupting you after this.
But no, like, no worries.
He's 22. He's going to be 23. You should be better than everybody by a lot at that age. But it still doesn't explain last year. He was also older than everybody for the most part last year, and he wasn't really anything special. And then something happened, and he joined a new team, And now he's the fucking older schoolyard bully, just destroying people. I don't blame anybody for discounting him because of the age, but like something popped because he was older last year and he was not nearly close to this.
Yeah, I mean, there really isn't, to me, any way to explain it. I mean, Oklahoma must not really have been like using him to his fullest or something. I know they had Reeves last year who was carrying a huge load for them, and he's off.
His field goal percentage on 2-point jumpers is 54. I'm sorry, I just pulled up some numbers.
Yeah, no, it's what? Ridiculous. Like, he's putting together like one of the best inside the arc scoring seasons that I have ever seen, really. Like, I know I'm gonna bring it back to the first name we mentioned on this podcast, but like, we're talking Riller territory in terms of just like how effective he's been inside the arc. You know, like, again, going to the back to the strength, like when he puts his shoulder down into someone, like they're going backwards, he can finish through contact with either hand. I think like the passing has been, because when I first like saw the stat profile, I was like, all right, well, this guy's getting to the rim a lot. Start watching him. I'm expecting most of the passing to just be like, all right, he's getting to the rim. He's going to be like making those basic, like
drawing double teams, triple like teams.
Like, you know, there's like some really like his passing versatility is real. Like, he's out there flinging no-look passes with either hand, manipulating defenders with his eyes. Like, I'm at the point with him where, like, I genuinely think he's one of the best passers in this class.
Of his passes are, like, get out your seat. Like, wow, I have to, like, run that back.
Yeah, like, he's, especially when he's, like, kind of at the top of the key and there's, like, they have like cutters working off of them. He's so good at just finding those cutters for, and I mean, he definitely has some style to him too. Like, these flashy passes. You know, like, I don't know, like the best passer in the class argument is like a tough one for me. Cause like, I just don't think this class has a lot of good passers, but like, he's definitely up there with, like, Travion Williams. And, like, I don't know if, like, you'd consider Teron Armstrong Jr. a prospect this year, Harrison Ingram, guys like that. Like, he's in that
upper, yeah, for sure,
of passers. I think the question, like, the big question with him that you kind of alluded to earlier was the shot. So he's at, doesn't take a lot of threes. He's at 33.8% right now on 65 attempts. I shouldn't say he doesn't take a lot of threes. Like, he's comfortable shooting from range, but like, it's not like he's a volume shooter. Most of the damage he does is inside the arc, and
right,
you know, the Oklahoma stuff is low volume just because his role wasn't super big there. But just looking at that, he was 4 of 24 from three last year, and 17 of 60 from three the year before. So that's like a little bit worrisome, him being this old and where he's at as a shooter. I think that's definitely a cause for some concern. There's definitely been some development from three, like, but what's even crazier is just his development from mid range. He's shooting 53.5% on long twos per Bart Torvik. Last year that was 35.7%. And the year before it was 24%. And it's like both of those seasons he had like 25 and 28 attempts.
I think what I'm going to have to do is go and actually pull some film somehow, if I can find some from his other 2 years before Wake Forest, and see if the shot actually changed or what. Just because, like, if I'm taking this production at face value, he's probably going to be pretty high on my board. And there is apples to oranges, and they're way different kinds of players, but like, the Knicks drafted Quentin Grimes last year, and Quentin, it was different because he came in as a like big time prospect, flamed out, changed his role from a point guard to a shooter, but like, he had two meh years, transferred, had a spectacular year, and a lot of smart people I talked to weren't buying it. And I personally was buying it, but it was, again, a different situation because you're talking pretty much with Quentin. It was like, do you buy the jump shot? Yes or no? And then that was it. And then with Alondis, you got to think about the point guarding and all of that. But that seems pretty straightforward too. And obviously, he's older and that makes it complicated. So, you know, he's such a weird eval that I think I'm just going to toss my hat on. This is not a I was going to say toss my hat on his team, but that's nobody says that. That's not a thing. I'm going to pick his side and probably, I don't want to say he's going to be my Grant Riller this year, but he's definitely, if he keeps this shit up, I mean, he just dropped 25 versus Duke. So like, he's clearly not afraid of doing this versus good competition. Do you tentatively at least have him first round?
Yeah, I think tentatively I have him first round right now. I think like there's some really interesting, it's cool that we have a guy like Blake Wesley and Alondis Williams like together in the same podcast, because like there's some really interesting conversations you could have about these two guys. Because like on one hand you've got Wesley, who's this younger player, has incredible tools as a creator, a guy who's jacking up a lot of threes, is capable of getting to the rim, but at the same time, there's a lot of warts. On the other hand, you have Williams, who's significantly older. He's going to be 23 as a rookie. Definitely has warts himself. How good is the jump shot? You know, the whole, like, I think the Oklahoma, like, the whole fact that this is like the first year where he's really done anything at the college level can kind of be looked at as a little bit of a concern, just because it leaves you wondering like what happened, like why has it taken him however long to like get to where he is now. I'm not saying like it's like code red alarm, but like it's definitely something that you have to take note of. But at the same time, like putting together just a ridiculous, ridiculous season. So like, what do you value more? Like the youth and the tools, or just like the insane 1 year production for an older guy? But I don't know. It's an interesting question. I'd say going back to what you said. Yeah. I mean, he's got, if he keeps up like this, he's going to have to be like in everyone's top 30 or 40s most likely.
Yeah. At this point he's going to be pretty high for me. I'm going to do a Twitter poll now, and then I'll do one again in a couple of months, and just, I'm interested to see who people prefer of the two of them. But I'm not even going to do it now because half the people still haven't heard of the two of them yet. So let me give it a while, and we can circle back to it as we get closer to the draft. Will, I want to thank you for joining me for an hour to talk about these fun prospects. You're my go-to when it comes to all things rim pressure and just general guard conversations. Guards are my weakness. Every year I inevitably have too many guards in my lottery, and I suspect, judging by my reactions to Blake Wesley and Alondis Williams, that will not be stopping this year. So thank you for coming along for the ride today.
No, Prez, thank you so much for having me. It was a great time.
All right, y'all, you know where to find him on Twitter, @_W_A. Did I add an extra underscore in there? Shoot,
I don't know. I missed
what. Here we go. I messed it up. Ignore what I just said. @W_A_Morris. There you go. No underscore to start. That's where you find him. Y'all, thank you for joining us again for another episode of Draft Strickland. We'll see you in 2 weeks, where we'll look at three or four more players with another guest. Until then, take care, be safe, and watch some of these prospects, because there's a lot of fun players this year. Peace.
The New York Knicks select.